Welcome again to Cottage Talk Extra Time. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Holly, Mike Gregg, and Emilio Dinello. In this special episode, we'll be looking back at the 3-0 victory for Fulham against Charlton Athletic at Craven Cottage. The reason why I call it a special episode is that Fulham actually did win another match, so we do have to talk about that. That's why it's special. Looks like two of my co-hosts are on the line with me and possibly a third. Let's see if I can get everyone on the line. Looks like Emilio's on with me as well. Let me start with Emilio. How you doing?
Hi there, Russ. Good afternoon. How are you?
I am well. We actually have everyone on the line. We've been having technical difficulties with Blog Talk Radio for a couple of days, but it looks like we're all in, my friend.
That's good. It's good to be back. It's been a while. It's been, for those who know me, it's been a difficult 2016, but hopefully the worst is over and I can start to look forward rather than looking backwards. But yeah, it's been a difficult start to the year for various reasons, as you well know.
Yep. Go ahead, Emilio.
No, that was just saying. So, yeah, I'm glad to be back on the show again. So, yeah, fingers crossed. Looking forward to doing the show with Mike and David and yourself today.
Okay, very good. Mike, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm really good, Russ, and especially after yesterday's result. And looking forward to sharing all our thoughts on the game because, you know, it was a good win, but there's lots of things to talk about as well.
Okay, very good. David, how are you doing?
I echo Mike's comments, and I'd like to give a special welcome back also to Emilio. Good to hear you back again. And as you know, for me, Emilio, 2015 was a difficult year, so things will get better in time, hopefully, for you, and I wish you the best.
Thank you very much, David. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, and honestly, Emilio, my thoughts go out to you and your entire family of the loss of your father. We talked about it on the show, and hopefully the show helps you get over these tough times that you're having.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for that. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start with you. Just share with me your opening thoughts on the 3-0 victory yesterday.
Mixed. I don't want to sound come across as being negative, but you know, let's take the win. We needed a win. We got a clean sheet, the first one I think since October. There were some encouraging signs, changes tactics at half time, so there were some positives there. But let's also not forget about who we were playing. We were playing the team bottom of the table, who've got more, you know, issues with their management and board than we have. that saying something. But overall, I'll take the win. It's a 3-0 win. Was that a fair reflection of the overall game? I think we deserved a 2-3 goal win margin. But at the same time, maybe we could have won that 4-2, 5-2 as opposed to winning 3-0. We were lucky to keep a clean sheet during the entire game. I think we'll reflect on that during the show today. But overall, you know, we needed a win. We needed to, you know, create a little bit of a gap between the bottom three, which we've now done. And hopefully we can push on. We said that a week ago against QPR, and then we fell apart against Blackburn. So let's ask the same question in 3 days' time when we played Leeds United away and Middlesbrough this time next week. Then we can determine whether we're actually making progress or not. But good win, encouraging performances across the pitch. Some average performances from the page, but there are still some concerns then. If you look into the detail where we were set up, we looked slow at times, quite passive, and There are still some areas of concern there, but it's slow progress, moving in the right direction. But let's not get carried away. That's my statement. You know, it's a 3-0 win against the bottom team.
Okay, very good there, my friend. Mike, over to you. Your opening thoughts on the 3-0 victory.
Pretty much echo Emilio's there. Really, it was a good win. Scores a little bit flattering if you take the whole game. And, you know, we gave them too many chances again. I mean, that's our story of the season. We give every team a lot of chances. But you could also see from Charlton, you know, why they're down the bottom as well. And you do have to feel for their fans in relation to what's going on at board and ownership level. But, you know, going back to ourselves, lots of good things to take from the game, you know, a couple of negatives, but most important thing was the result, especially after Tuesday. Performance comes a little bit second. But there's a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff Jokanović done, which all the fans have taken too well, you know, the changes he's made, which we'll talk about later. So, yeah, I mean, it's a good win. It's a game we, you know, we all said we should win easily, and you know, it was my feeling is, you know, it's a good win, but it was a bit closer than 3-0, and we'll take it and we move on to Leeds.
Okay, very good, Mike, and I'm glad that you mentioned Slavisa. I actually have some commentary from him that we'll be sharing during the show when we talk about halftime. We're going to talk about halftime and the adjustments made, and that's when I will share the head coach reaction and some commentary from him, because I think it's telling on what's going on with him, what's going on with the club. But we'll share that a little bit later on. David, over to you. What were your opening thoughts about yesterday? Do you agree with your co-host?
Yeah, I think so. I just to add to that, really, it was a Fulhamish sort of thing. Really, it was pretty much a game of two halves again. Really, from Fulham, I think we had a good half, we had a bad half, the other way around actually. And I have to say, I tend to agree with what Jose Riga said, that he felt Charlton were a bit unlucky to be behind at half time, and I think they were, because first half, you know, we were narrow, and I thought we were very disjointed. Whereas second half, we played a lot better. So overall, it was the right result, i.e. a victory. It's a match I think we deserve to win, but as I think as Mike and Emilio said, it could have been a lot closer. Maybe it should have been a lot closer than that. I mean, you know, we on Friday we talked about having, you know, I said my head says it's going to be a tight victory. My heart hoped for an expansive victory, and it was both in a way, because in some ways it's a very tight win, but in other ways it was a comfortable win, and that's sort of what the whole range of emotions you get with watching Fulham. Nothing's ever sort of straightforward, really. But we got there in the end, and we ended up somewhere in the middle of the two, I think, between it being tight and being expansive. I think we would have liked it to be, you know, more convincing, really. I mean, that would really be, I think, a sign that things are going the right way had it been more convincing. But at least we got the win, and at least it wasn't just by one goal and we were biting our nails at the end. So definitely a positive, especially after the midweek performance. But as I think Emilio said as well, we have to remember we're playing the worst team in the league, and it's a match that we should be winning.
I totally agree with Emilio's sentiments and yours, and I'm glad that you guys keep bringing that up, because we have to put this in context. This is not a good team. They are bottom of the league, and we should be taking care of business. And it took a little bit to do that, and we'll talk about the reasons why it took a while, but they got there in the end. So I understand where you're going, Dave. It was a little bit of both for you. All right, Mike, I'm going to start with you with talking about the starting 11, because when I saw it, I was shaking my head a little bit. I was okay. I wasn't sure how this was going to work out. We talked about this on the previous show. I believe you mentioned you thought we might play a little narrow, and we ended up playing narrow to begin the match. What were your thoughts when you saw the starting 11?
Well, yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? Because both me and David went for different formations and starting 11, and straight away you saw that, and you saw it was going to be four defenders, and then it was a question of what the setup was. Would it be a flat four or something else? And in the end, it turned out to be our friend the Diamond. And you know, as we saw throughout the first half, it didn't really work. But I wasn't surprised. The reason I picked a sort of a back four and then a narrow team was, you know, to try and get Kenny involved, and also, you know, the 5-3-2 didn't work up at Blackburn, and I did think he was going to drop Garbutt and a couple of other players. So I was surprised at some of the players who were retained, but not surprised he picked a, you know, a four-man midfield, really. But the other thing that was missing, you know, is where is Ince? You know, it's been mentioned that he might be injured.
Great question.
You know, the other guy on loan who only had a brief spell, you know, in the Blackburn game. So, again, he's missing. And then you see Baird going to the bench. And the biggest surprise for me was Tunnicliffe on the bench. You know, an hour's under 21 games after, what, 3 months out? And he's straight in the squad, which I think tells you an awful lot about what Jokanović is looking for from his players, which is, you know, energy, commitment, to, you know, grind out these points for the rest of the season. But also, you know, Tunnicliffe's obviously shown in training that he's worth his place straight away. So, yeah, very interesting selections on and off the pitch to start the game. But, yeah, I wasn't shocked at only having that kind of formation.
Okay, and that was interesting to me, Mike, because I wasn't expecting a diamond. It turned out to be a diamond with that formation. And, David, I want to go to you. Again, you and Mike picked different formations when we did the preview show. Were you surprised when you saw the starting 11 and then, of course, the formation which turned out to be the diamond?
I was surprised because it did remind me a lot of what Mike had said on Friday, and I was pulling Mike's leg thinking, no, we're not going to go back to being narrow after, you know, what we've seen we can do. So I wholly expected to see the 3-5-2 because I convinced that's the best formation for us and the players we have. And I think, you know, when we got to the second half, we probably see that was the case yesterday. But for me, there wasn't a real shock in terms of who was picked. In the main, most of the players that I'd expected to be picked were picked. I suppose it was bringing, obviously, back in people like Kakanicic. I suppose in the main, it was only kind of Kakanicic for Maddle was the only real change, because that's obviously how they did second half, when they just to put it back to the 3-5-2. So it wasn't a big change of personnel. I did even, you know, I said for some reason, and it was partly in error and partly in hope, that I said Dan Byrne would play, and it turned out in fact he did play. So yeah, the only change really was Kakanicic coming in. And at first, obviously, the way that the team was laid out, you thought we're going to see a 4-4-2. But when we started, it was clear they were playing, you know, a 4-1-3-2 or a diamond, as it transpired. But for me, it just didn't work at all. And it is not so much about the formation as such. Just as, you know, for me, I know I bang on about 3-5-2, but it's not that I'm a fan of 3-5-2 and every team should always play 3-5-2. It's just purely for the players we have and the way we play that I think it suits us best. And for me, it didn't work because we were very, very narrow. We had four players in the space of midfield, very, very close together, in that being Parker, O'Hara, Kearney and Kakanicic. And they were getting each other's way. I don't think it gives you options. It doesn't give Tom Kearney the space to play in. He needs to be able to run and do these little sort of pirouettes, play short balls, play sort of longer balls, play through balls, but they're just all in each other's way, the way it was. And for me, it just really, it really, really didn't work. And I was surprised that he even considered going for it. And obviously the good point for me was that he realised the error of his ways. It wasn't working, and he's changed it at half time to something that worked a lot better. The only
right.
question I would put to that, though, is, you know, it's good that he's seen the error of his ways. But in an ideal world, you want a coach that would not make that error in the first place, that they would, you know, pick the right formation from the start. But, you know, he's been man enough to hold his hands up and say, I made a mistake. He made the changes, and it was clear to all of us, I think, that second half we were a much more organised team.
I totally agree with that, David. It's like night and day. When I watched it this morning, I watched the entire match, and it really is a match of two halves, and I think the changes at halftime had a good deal to do with that, and we'll talk about that as we go through it. But before we do that, I have to go back to my friend Emilio. Emilio, I was talking to you before the match. What were your thoughts about the starting 11?
I think the guys have said very much what I thought. Not many surprises there, to be honest. I would have liked him to maybe show up more balls. You know, with the home team, we've got a shocking home record this season, and we've had done for a number of seasons, and I would have expected us against the team in the bottom three to show a lot more balls and maybe play a more expansive style of football. And admittedly, you know, he made the changes at half time. I thought we were, again, a little bit too conservative for our own good in that first half. And we looked shapeless. And I was surprised to see Garb, but I think Mike made the point earlier on that, you know, after his performance on Tuesday, maybe I thought he might have been in for the chop. But again, he's been given a second chance to resurrect that game. And, you know, he had a fairly solid game on yesterday. But overall, you know, no surprises. You know, other than Garber, maybe I would expect him to be dropped. And Kakanicic, you know, I know we keep saying he's in and out of the team, season in, season out. I think I was saying to you yesterday after the game, I think we might see the end of him this season. Unless he starts to turn around his performances and starts to play more consistently, I can't see a future for him, because every time he's given the opportunity, he doesn't really grab them. And as much as I like him individually and his professionalism, unfortunately, he's not really offering much. And you saw yesterday he offered very, very little throughout the game. So overall, no surprise with the lineup. But when you're playing against the bottom team at home and badly needing a win, maybe I would have liked us to be a little bit more positive, a bit less conservative. And like I said, show a bit more balls. I think that was what was a little bit disappointing. But like I said, he made a change at half time and we did eventually get the win. But, you know, we did have to scratch our head a few times and we had to sort of, I had to pray a few times that we wouldn't have conceded any goals. A better team would have punished us yesterday and we might have been reflected on a different scoreline today.
Listen, I'm glad that you mentioned that, Emil, because that's going to go right into us discussing the first half observations. I can just tell you that they had more than a few opportunities to score in the first half, and if they were more clinical, they really could have punished us, and they weren't, and we are fortunate that they weren't. But I'll just go through a couple key moments. I'll go right back to you to get your first half observations. Fulham started off fairly good, had several corners to begin the match. Slowly but surely, Charlton Athletic came into the match, and their danger man, I want to call him their danger man because you and I talked about this after the match. Callum Harriott had a shot that was nicely saved by Andy Lonergan in the ninth minute, and they again were growing into the game as the first half progressed. But and I will say this, against the run of play, Fulham actually got the first goal of the match. You know, again, this is a goal by Tom Kearney, which came off of a rebounded shot by Scott Parker. It started off of a situation of a corner. So Fulham were up 1-0, and I want to say fortunate to be up 1-0 at that point. And Charlton almost equalized in the 39th minute. As Simon Mackinac had an opportunity to get the equalizer, but his shot went wide. And then Fulham had a wonderful opportunity in the 45th minute by Ross McCormack, wide open, and unfortunately his shot goes over the net, and that was a wonderful opportunity to go into the half up 2-0, but fortunately Ross missed the opportunity. All right, Emilio, I want to get your first half observations of this match.
I think first half an hour, we were just very, very slow, passive. I think I must have tweeted around that after about 30-odd minutes, it was more interesting watching paint dry than watching our performance on the pitch. That's how boring it was. It was terrible, very slow, lethargic. Dave made a point earlier, there's just too many bodies in the middle of the pitch. We looked shapeless at times, and their danger man was their number 11, Harriott. And, he was giving us all sorts of problems, with his pace, movement, vision. He reminded me a bit like Junior Hoylett in terms of physique, presence, potential danger outside the end, like another Sean Wright Phillips type of player. And he did give us a lot of problems. And the changes that were made at half time was to counteract that threat, which worked successfully. But, we didn't deserve to take the lead. But it goes back to the point, if you don't take your chances at this level, you're going to get punished. And, Charlton had some decent chances, maybe should have been ahead or certainly not been behind. And, they didn't take their chances. But overall, I just felt for 30 minutes, we were appalling. No movement, no shape, no passing, plays out of position. Fredericks are not able to cross the halfway line. Kaká not supporting him in any shape or form. So it was dreadful, the first half, I'm going to be very honest. But, we started getting back into the game. There was that 5-10 minute spell either side of the goal that gave us a bit more encouragement, a bit more confidence. We got the goal, but equally, I don't think we pushed on. I thought, well, actually, that would have given us the impetus to go on and get another goal. But again, Charlton slowly got back into the game again. And I think there was a cross into the penalty area that both Byrne and Amirabieta missed their marker. And the guy got in and got a header in off target, admittedly. But how the hell did that guy manage to get between two tall central defenders and still manage to get ahead of them? That was very, very concerning. So that was around the 40th minute, if I recall. But overall, not the best first half, but we went in 1-0 up and undeservedly. So we shouldn't really complain. But overall, I think most fans will have been very disappointed with that overall performance in the first half. And even McCormack had a lot of the ball, but is it tactics? Is he being told not to pass it forward, lock sideways, backwards? He wasn't finding that killer ball, that killer instinct. Something's not quite right. Whether it's, like I said, it's Jurkanović's tactic just to hold the ball, play those short passes, don't spray the ball out wide, and try to keep possession. Maybe that's the instructions that all the players have been given, in particular the captain. But as far as I'm concerned, McCormack wasn't that threat in that first half. He just had too much of the ball, but wasn't going anywhere, just sideways and backwards. And is that him, or is that instructions from the coach? And maybe that's another discussion on another day, but overall, poor first half, but we were leading 1-0.
And that's the bottom line. The bottom line is that we went into the half not playing well, up 1-0, and that's a huge positive to come out of it. But I'm glad that you went into details of how poor they played, because there was a huge part of that first half that they were poor and fortunate to be up at the half. Mike, I'm going to go to you. And one thing I also want to mention, because we could talk about this, about thoughts about halftime. I didn't mention this when we were going through the observations, but a huge observation for me was the yellow cards by both of our center backs. That, to me, was very worrying. I want to get your thoughts on the first half, but also, were you concerned, as I was, about the two yellow cards?
Well, yeah, certainly on Ambrosetti, because you think, you know, if he's going to get one yellow very early in the game, you worry for the rest of it. But to be fair, he was, he did okay, wasn't he? He didn't do anything too reckless second half, so he was fine. Dan Burns, it was a yellow. It was a little bit unlucky, because it was the sort of the ref getting in the way, and I think a bit of frustration. He took the player down. For me, it was a yellow. I mean, it doesn't matter. The ref is part of the game, and you just have to get on with it. But I thought the ref, we seem to get the yellows first in our home games, when really you look at some of the things the away teams do, they should be getting booked first. But you just know that's the sort of rule of thumb at Fulham for some reason. But, going back to the half and what happened, I was tweeting it was disjointed. It certainly wasn't as bad a performance as Tuesday, but we just weren't creating enough. We had a few corners, and we'd obviously been working on them, because McCormick and O'Hara trying these short type corners, and it just wasn't working. And I think I'll give fair play to Charlton. They set themselves up with two wide men, and the one up top, and Callum Harriott was pretty much free to run around and do what he liked, and they sort of kept Garbutt and Fredericks back. And I think Jokanović sort of mentioned it after the game. I do like the fact that he used the words, I killed Fredericks and Garbutt. And, he did, because they just couldn't get over the halfway line. And, so I think you have to give Charlton a bit of credit there. But we were far too narrow. And you can't really look at the average position for yesterday. But if you do, because Kaká and O'Hara were taken off, you can see where they were, and they're virtually on the centre circle. So not doing much, not getting the ball wide at all. And, we were fortunate to get the goal and be in the lead. And Lonergan made certainly a couple of saves. But then after the goal, as Emilio said, there was a near post header which just went past. I think there was another shot as well. So it could easily have been 1-1. And McCormick really had the best chance. It was, it was one of the few things Kaká did well, linked up. I think it was with Dembele, who then passed it to McCormick, whoever it was. But then he skied the ball so high, when really he should have been hitting the target, plenty of time. So you could argue we could have been two up. But in the end, you're going to take the 1-0 go in. There was frustration certainly around where I was sitting in the Johnny Haynes stand, but relief as well. And you hope they come out second half and do a better job. And as we know, that's what they did. But, disjointed is my words for the first half.
That's a very good phrase to use, or just word, disjointed. That really describes it well, Mike. All right, David, over to you. What were your observations of the first half? Pretty similar to what our co-hosts have been saying?
Yeah, we're all in agreement that I think it was a bit fortunate at the end that we got a half-time lead, but you're going to take that with both hands, obviously. And we were disjointed. It was the narrowness, as I said already. I think they're literally all in each other's way half the time. That's the problem. And this is, if you remember, when we had Simons as manager and we played the diamond on a regular basis, I identified that as being one of the reasons why we used to concede so many crosses, because we had no midfield width. Our only width was at fullback level. So the attacking players on the other team, as we saw yesterday, they're getting right up. They're getting up to have a go at our fullbacks. And I thought yesterday we were playing quite deep as well. We talked about playing a higher line of late, but first half I thought we were pretty deep. And so they're getting to put pressure on our fullbacks. they're getting to, in positions then to put crosses in. And they put a couple of really good crosses in as well. And we were very lucky not to concede from those, you know. We really were. But, you know, we got our break, and as we've said before, we really should have had a second. It was a move of the half, really, probably by either team. We broke away down the right, ending up with McCormack had more time probably to at least get the thing on target. The other thing I was going to do, you stole my thunder a little bit with. I was going to reference the two yellow cards, which was a worry. And I was tweeting about it yesterday that, you know, it was a bit of a contest between Byrne and Amabietra with a late entry from Tunnicliffe to see who could be sent off. Thankfully, none of them were sent off. But yeah, Amabietra was a bang yellow card. He's taken the guy out on the edge of the area. Ref had no choice with that. And we were lucky that the free kick... He did actually head the free kick as part of the wall away, Amabietra, so he made up for that.
He did.
Dan Burns' one was total frustration. He actually made a really good tackle just before that. And as we broke the ball away, it hit the ref, went back to them. And Dan Byrne, you know, you could see the frustration. He just lunged in and take the guy out. Someone on Twitter last night was saying it was a fair tackle and he won the ball cleanly. And I think he was roundly criticised for that. But the other thing we talked about, and you said about not having any balls, I think. Amelia said not having any balls. Well, I don't think you can say that for Ryan Fredericks. He proved that he does have balls, as we saw in the first half, when he blocked a cross and was doubled up in pain for several minutes. And he even tweeted later, if you saw that, he said, about the result, and don't worry, my cherries are fine, if you saw that. Because he took it smack in the nether regions, Ryan Fredericks. You have to feel sorry for him. But it wasn't quite as funny as, obviously, when the assistant ref got taken out by Garbutt, of course, which was another highlight of the first half. He was very Polax, but glad to see that he was able to continue after a couple of minutes, which was surprising. We only had 2 minutes added time in the first half, although it was probably not... The ref was doing it to be kind to us, that it wasn't a half you wanted to go on longer than necessary. But only 2 minutes added time, and there was quite a bit of stoppage with the assistant being taken out there. But as I say, we got in at half time, the changes were made, and we came out a different team second half, really.
Oh, we did, David. And Emilio, did you want me to go back to you about the first half? You've been messaging me, so I want to give you your chance to share your thoughts.
David obviously mentioned those two incidents, which probably was the highlight of the first half, you know, if we say, you know, not necessarily if you're the Lino or Ryan Fredericks, for that matter. But I think that's the key thing about the free kick that Amarabieta conceded. It's, you know, far too often, time and time again, we've given away these cheap free kicks outside the penalty area in these very dangerous positions. And, you know, we often get away with it, but sooner or later we're going to get found out and we're going to end up conceding a lot of goals from these very dangerous free kicks just outside the penalty area. We keep giving away cheap fouls in very dangerous places. We need to sort of mature in that area. I know the coach is trying to address the defensive issues, but let's reflect on how many free kicks we keep conceding every game in that dangerous area just outside the penalty area. It's far too often. And yesterday we were lucky against that Charlton that didn't take those chances, but another better team might have hurt us more. So. So something that we need to consider. Can't keep giving away cheap free kicks in those danger areas.
Okay, very good there, Emilio. I'm glad that you mentioned that. And it's something, you know, it's funny. With Fernando Amorebieta, we've talked about this several times. He makes me nervous because I like his aggressiveness, but he really struggles that line of aggressiveness to being reckless. And some of these free kicks is kind of going with what you're talking about, Emilio. You know, I said this with Giannis. Giannis likes the aggressiveness and wouldn't change anything. And I respect Giannis on this, but he just makes me a little bit nervous. Do you see where I'm going on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he's trying to play a very continental, like a Spanish-Italian style of football, which we may get away with it back in Italy and Spain. But over here, you'll be penalised time and time again. And, you know, with arms around the neck, a little bit tugs here and there, I think Fredericks got away with a tug yesterday in the first half, where it was a blatant free kick. He was pulling the I think it must have been number Harriet's shirt blatantly and got away with it. So we can't afford to be, you know, immature in those areas, because we will concede more penalties and we will concede goals from free kicks. So an area that we need to improve on quite significantly.
Okay, very good. Very interesting by all three of you on the first half, and and just overall observations. All right, guys, let's go to halftime and the changes made by Slavisa Jokanović, because I think they are significant and changed the match. That's my opinion, and I'm going to share with you the changes he's made, and then I'm going to read part of his head coach reaction, which will kind of back up the reasons why he made the changes. Let's start with the change. He changed the formation, and Mike, I believe you mentioned that it was not really a 3-5-2. It was more like a 3-4-1-2, but basically three in the back with Kearney basically behind the two strikers, and you had the four in central midfield. You had Baird coming on from O'Hara, and you had Maddow coming on from Kaká. So two players go off, two players come on. And now I'm going to read the reaction from Slavisa Jokanović. You can read this right on the phone website. I find this refreshing, and I tweeted this out and I put it on the Facebook page. A head coach admitting a mistake. This is a quote from him. Quote, "We played good football today. In the first 45 minutes, we found many difficulties, and Charlton troubled us many times. It's probably my mistake. We tried to play from the middle. I killed Ryan Fredericks and Luke Garbutt and didn't find the right position for them. We scored the goal in the first 45 minutes, but I wasn't so happy, so decided to switch the structure, and we played better football the second 45 minutes." Okay, those are the comments from Slavisa after the match, and like I mentioned, I just find it interesting that he pretty much admitting a mistake. Mike, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts about the changes at halftime and also the manager reaction?
Well, certainly the, to be one up in a game, you're not doing too well. I mean, how many times have we seen that and then no changes in the second half? So I think everyone was pretty much expecting the same team to go out. But, to make maybe one, you could have said O'Hara and Kaká, but to gamble on taking two off, bringing on a player you've just bought on loan, even though, he's long-term affiliation with us, and, change the formation when you're in a winning position, it really is a, breath of fresh air. And we're going to have to get used to Jokanović and his chopping and changing of tactics. Said it before, the Watford fan said he would do it, two, three times during a game. And it keeps players on their toes, and it's a good education for players. I mean, you just cannot stick with the same formation week in, week out, really. It's horses for courses and, getting the right players in the right place. So the double sub was a real surprise. But then, it took a minute or two and then you realise it's him and, it's Baird and Parker sitting, and which is what I advocated on Friday night, admittedly in a slightly different formation. But I was happy with that. And then, to see we've gone to the three centre-backs, two wing-backs, and Kearney, more importantly, really behind the front two. And it played out so well for the rest of the half, And I said to Dave last night on tweeting each other or WhatsApping or whatever we were doing, have we stumbled across the best way to get Kearney in the game, which is, maybe not in a flat three in midfield, but, that one position behind two strikers. And, certainly came across that way yesterday. But good to see Baird on the pitch. Good to see the two full-backs playing in what really is their best roles. And then for Jokanović to come out afterwards and say, I made a mistake. And, it's just amazing considering, some of the managers we've had in the past who just are so reactive and not proactive. And is a manager proactive when you're one up? So
absolutely.
I'm feeling really good about Jokanović, and and I'm just hoping that we can finish the season well and get the club to back him, because I do think we have a manager now who is a winner, won't take any crap from anyone. And, even with some of the players who we don't rate in this squad, I think he can get the best out of them and, push us, to challenge next year at least.
No, very good point there, Mike. And it's interesting. I tweeted to you, would Kidd have made these changes? Would Yoel have made these changes? Would Mark Hughes made these changes, and you basically tweeted back to me, I already know the answer to that, and you're right, they wouldn't have. And that, to me, was refreshing, that he was willing to change things when he knew it wasn't working, and to, on top of it, to blame himself, which we're not used to seeing. So, for me, what happened at halftime was huge, and I'm glad that we could really talk about it, because it's something that I wanted to see. I wanted to see a manager that basically said, you know what, it isn't working. I need to change things up. I'm not afraid to change things up. I'm not afraid to look at myself and say, you know what, I made a mistake. I'm going to fix it. And he tried to fix it, and it actually worked. David,
yeah,
over to you.
I mean,
what are your thoughts? Oh, I'm sorry, Mike. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to come back. And so, yes, maybe a little bit overboard about Jokanović and going for next season. But I think, you know, I've seen some people say, oh, yeah, we give him next year, rebuild for two or three. I'm sorry, you know, we need to be pushing for promotion next year. And I think we have the right man to do that. So none of this long-term building, it's, you know, it's go for it next year and support him. That's what the club have to do.
No, very good. Very good, Mike. And I'm right there with you. I also want to mention earlier on, I agreed that Savica said that killing Garbutt and Fredericks, but what I meant is that he was saying, he said that in his manager reaction. I was just kind of agreeing with that. All right, David, over to you.
Well, the funny thing is I said to my son first half, this isn't working. I said, what can we do? And we both agreed that probably the move was to take Kaká off because he was not in the game and to put Maddle on and switch to 3-5-2. So, as you know, I have been sending DMs to Jokanović. Whether he reads them or not, I don't know, but I told him to go 3-5-2 and he did it. Just like I sent him a DM to say, Tom Kearney needs a rest, you know, for Leeds on Tuesday. Get him off now. Just make sure he didn't get a hat trick, obviously, Russ, yesterday. But now,
oh, you've got to bring that up, David.
No, I couldn't face you getting a hat trick, so I had to send him a message to say, like, give Tom a rest now. Let him go off to a hero's applause, you know, off the pitch. But in all seriousness, more seriousness, because I may be serious anyway, but in all seriousness, it was clear that how it works better. Just to talk about the notation of the formation, we call it a 3-5-2 because it's basically three defenders, five midfielders, two forwards. But that covers all variants of that as well. So, yeah, it, in effect, it's actually a 3-4-1-2, and that's what we've been saying. I don't think, you know, Mike said we stumbled upon it. Maybe Fulham has stumbled upon it, but that's what we've been saying for weeks. Although we've been calling it a 3-5-2, it's always been, as far as I'm concerned, with two sort of holding midfielders and Kearney as the advanced midfielder behind the front two strikers. So, yeah, no, we 3-5-2, 3-4-1-2, just call it what you like, but that's what I expected to see. It's just like, I suppose you could say, a diamond is still a 4-4-2 formation, of course. It's just a variant of 4-4-2. You've still got four midfielders, but they're not strung across the middle in the same way as a flat 4-4-2 would be. But, no, so getting back to that, yeah, the reason why me, Mike, and yourself have been talking for months about this 3-5-2 is because Kearney plays best centrally behind the front two with two holding midfielders. But also, it's about the fullbacks, as we've said, and this is what I've identified. Ryan Fredericks, we all agree, is probably an average defender. As a defender, there's not much to choose between him and Jazz Richards, in all honesty. But when it comes into an attacking role, you know, I think you saw the difference yesterday. Once he was able to get forward, you know, he a few times has taken his man on, getting on the outside, beating him, and he put some useful crosses in. He's certainly got an extra string to his bow that Jazz Richards hasn't. And even Luke Garbi has. I mean, Luke Garbi put a great cross in, you've got to say, for the third goal. But Luke Garbi doesn't have that burst of pace that Fredericks does. Mind you, if you thought the ball was going to hit you between the legs, you'd run that fast as well, Russ, I would imagine. But anyway, it's not just about that. And I think it's about Kearney is the one for me. And Mike's been saying, we're not building the team around McCormack. We're building it
Mike
around Kearney, and that's right.
Mike is
And so, well, Mike's got to be right, obviously, about about lots of things. Yeah, I mean, I was counting the width of the pitch yesterday. I'm still standing by my 65 metres.
Oh, do we have to go back to that?
I was so bored in the first half that I was counting the stripes and measuring it in my mind. And there's 12 stripes of 6 yards each. But anyway, no, Mike is right. The team is to be built around Kearney. And that means Kearney's got to play in that role where he excels. He's wasted out wide, and he's not enough of an aggressive midfielder to play as part of a midfield two. He needs to play as part of a midfield three, as the advanced midfielder. You could argue you could play with one defensive midfielder and two attacking midfielders, so like almost a 3-3-2-2, but I think the 3-4-1-2 works the best. That gives Kearney the space, because that's what I was said about when it's narrow, Kearney just does not have this space to do what he does. Yesterday, he had all the options on. He had Baird and Parker just behind him. He had the Garbutt and Fredericks offering him width and overlap, and he had the two forwards in front of him. So he had a whole different range of passes available to him. He could run with it because he had space. He wasn't tripping over Kakalicic. He wasn't tripping over other people who were under his nose, you know. And it works for him. But it's also players like Fredericks. You're going to play Fredericks. You've got to use him to his advantages, and that is as a wing-back. And I think for us, honestly, you know, keep going on about it. I think it's been obvious to us for weeks where we should go with it. But hopefully at last now, the penny has dropped as well with Slavisa. He's tried different things, and he's seen that it really does work this way for us. It's not necessarily always going to be like that, but we've got a team where we are heavy in central midfielders and we're heavy in centre-backs. We've got plenty of choice in both departments, and therefore, you know, that's where it works for us. And the only people we have who can play full-backs, in the main, both play better as wing-backs anyway. So it's almost, you know, it almost picks himself in a way, that the formation. It's not to say you can't make adjustments. Like yesterday, we made a subtle adjustment at half-time by taking off O'Hara, who likes to get around. And he moves around a lot, with Baird was holding more of a position. And I actually spoke to O'Hara afterwards and asked him, and it was purely a tactical move. And my assumption of that is that he's planning not to play Parker on Tuesday at Leeds, I would imagine, because he gave him 90 minutes. So I'm thinking he gave O'Hara a half and he's given Baird a half with the intention of playing them both on Tuesday without Parker. But I could be wrong, obviously. But, you know, the second half wasn't perfect. Charlton still had their chances. Lonergan still made some good saves. But we also had some very good chances ourselves with that excellent run by Dembele where he's hit the bar. We also had a couple of wasteful ones from Dembele where he was put into good positions and he shot poorly. We had Tom Kearney's run as well where he's tried to chip the keeper on his right foot. He's gone over the bar. And, you know, we got into some good positions there. Obviously, the goals themselves, of course. Second goal, nice header from Michael Maddle there. Just what you want to see. And, of course, Tom Kearney's third. Ball's come out to him, he's hit it well. And it's great that, you know, we've actually scored all three goals, you know, more or less from corners, one way or another, which is, I don't think we've scored any goals from corners all season, really, have we? But, so, yeah, much better second half, even though, as I say, Charlton still had a few opportunities to score. Things weren't perfect. You know, we looked much more coordinated, cohesive. We played with more pace, more movement, and we looked much more of an attacking threat. And I'm hoping now that, you know, Slavisa realises that and we'll be able to hone that to work. You know, just tinker with it as you need to be for each game, depending on who the opposition is, who the players are you have available. But it was great, and I think we all ended feeling quite exhilarated yesterday, the fact that we'd kept a clean sheet and won fairly comfortably.
No, very good there, David. Very good analysis. All right, Emilio, I am going to go over to you, and David and Mike did a very good job of analyzing the changes at the half. The one thing that I want to mention to you and get your thoughts on, the guys were already talking about it, unlocking some of our players like Garbutt and also Fredericks and really unlocking Kearney. What are your thoughts about Slavisa making these changes to really emphasize the strengths of many of our players? And also, you had mentioned to me, you had some thoughts about him admitting a mistake. So feel free to share your thoughts on all of this.
Yeah, I think, you know, sent you after the Blackburn game. Obviously, I wasn't there on Tuesday night, but from what I saw and what I've been reading on Twitter, you know, obviously we were appalling that night, but I was disappointed that he didn't take any form of accountability for that performance. Now, yes, it's all well about blaming the players, not good enough. We were appalling, worst performance under his regime, but you still have to take some sort of responsibility as a coach. And that was disappointing. So I was quite scathing of him post-Tuesday night that he didn't put his hand up and then taken some sort of responsibility for that awful performance. But again, he must have listened to some of those scathing attacks from him. Obviously, he decided to do something about it at half-time yesterday. You know, I think we all called out for those changes to be made. You know, it was a bit very clear that Kakaniklić offered zero yesterday. No defensive cover, no attacking threat. And probably looked a little bit lost, you know, looked a bit like a larger version of Sean Kavanagh. Just didn't know what he needed to do yesterday, didn't know what his position was, and just felt a little bit lost in midfield. So I'm very pleased that Jukanović is unpredictable. We may have Slava Bingo here instead of McGaff Bingo, Felix Bingo. But, you know, again, it's keeping players on their toes. You know, he's not afraid to make changes, change them quickly. I think, to your earlier point, had Kit Simons got into half-time with a 1-0 lead yesterday, I don't think he would have changed anything, and neither would Martin Jol. So, again, so I like the bravery and the courage that he took to make those changes. And I think also we shouldn't hide the fact, I think Mike made the point earlier, that, you know, let's give Charlton some credit for their first-half performance, and was it Harriet in particular? Jukanović very clearly had to counteract that threat, and you saw that in the number 11, the Harriet did that, offered very little in the second half. And why is it? Because obviously the balance of our play, the shape and structure of our team in the second half didn't allow the freedom for Harriet to come forward and play with a lot more flair and presence. So, again, Charlton were a different team without him. He didn't see much of the ball. And, you know, let's applaud the coach for making those changes at half-time. But, again, let's be honest. First 10 minutes of that second half, it was even Stevens. You know, it wasn't right. Fulham first 10 minutes. I thought we, again, struggled to sort of compose ourselves and take some sort of authority. And it was quite open at some point. You know, Charlton came out looking again the equaliser quickly, you know. But so it was an open game. It suddenly became, you know, it was, anyone could have scored at that time. You both defences are very poor, so you felt there was going to be a goal at either end of either Charlton or Fulham's goal, at, you know, soon in that second half. But then we sort of stamped our authority. We stepped up the tempo, and we were a different team from around 55 minutes onwards. And in that subsequent 30 minutes, we scored two goals and probably could have had another two or three. So hence, I think the scoreline isn't necessarily flattering. I think overall, in terms of chances we created and the type of chances that we missed, I think we deserved a 3-0 margin, but whether we should have won 5-2 rather than 3-0 would be more an accurate reflection. But, you know, I commend him for making those changes. But to my earlier point, let's see what we do against Leeds United on Tuesday night and Middlesbrough next Saturday. And if we come back with equal positive performances, and then we can say we're going places. But if we're going to perform away to Leeds like we did with Blackburn next week, then we're back to square one again. So good second half. Areas of improvement. We've ticked a lot of boxes. But at the same time, there was the last 10 minutes when we sat back and defended, you know, Charlton could have had two goals in that last 10 minutes. I think, is it Harriet who actually missed an open goal? I think it was from the other end of the pitch. I couldn't see if it was specifically him. But another team would have buried us. That could have been 3-1. It might have even been 3-2. So positives, yes, but still some question marks, you know, in some areas of the pitch. So, let's see what we do against Leeds on Tuesday.
Okay, very good. And I'm glad that you already went into really sharing your observations. I'm sorry, regarding the second half. And I do want to mention, Emilio, that it was Harriet late in the match that had that opportunity that he missed. He also had an opportunity in the 52nd minute. Just another shot from outside the box. He was dangerous the entire match, but I think Fulham did a much better job of keeping him as quiet as they could, better in the second half. So possibly the change of formation really worked to our advantage against a player like that. But before I go to you, Mike, just want to mention that in the 59th minute, Michael Maddow scored off the header of a corner to make it 2-0, and only just a few minutes later, Moussa Dembele had a wonderful opportunity to make it 3-0, but his shot hit the woodwork and did not go in. So we were still at 2-0, but then that changed in the 78th minute where Tom Kearney scored his second goal of the match to make it 3-0. And I also want to mention and get your thoughts on this, Mike, the return of Ryan Tunnicliffe. It was good to see him back, but I thought he was a little bit too aggressive and got a yellow card, and honestly, potentially could have gotten a red card. So I want to get your second half observations in general, Mike.
Well, yeah, I mean, we could, you know, we were a lot more solid and, you know, defensively and, you know, much better attacking wise throughout that half. And it was definitely our half. And, you know, Charlton had less chances. There were still some hairy moments, but, you know, the two goals were good. And, you know, Dembele had a really good run and shot, and he was very unlucky not to score there. You know, so overall, it was, you know, it was such a step up from the first half. But for me, the key things were, or the key changes, apart from the actual formation, were bad, to be honest. Him and Parker next to each other. You know, I was lucky enough they were down my end of the pitch most of it. And you could just see Baird all the time just, you know, pointing, talking to players. You know, he made one major mistake where we were doing the old, you know, let's keep the ball for about 30 passes and then get ourselves in a mess, and he lost the ball then. But apart from that moment, he was talking to Byrne, Ambretta, you know, to Kearney, Fredericks, everyone on that side, and, you know, did a great job, really. And Medel, who played in front of me as well, he's a proper defender. And it was good to see him on the pitch. I didn't want to go overboard last week when he made his debut, but I'm going to go over it today and say that,
well,
you know, on the pre-appearances, he's probably, as things stand today, the best defender. And by that, I mean somebody who knows what that job involves. And it doesn't mean, you know, throwing yourselves in for a tackle or being right up the arse of a player and who can then turn you. It's about harassing, standing, being on your toes, being able to move left and right. And I'm very impressed by him now on the free appearances. As to Ryan, he reminded me of his first appearance when after his suspension at the beginning of the season. He wants to come on. You know, he is lots of energy running around. He can be a bit desperate sometimes in his tackles, and I think that was shown. On initial viewing, I would have said he was lucky. I've seen players get sent off for that. Whether it was a bad tackle, whether he made the ball or not, in real time, you know, he got a yellow, but it could have been worse. And it's just him trying to make a point. Once he settles down, he's going to be a real asset. And you've got to look at him long-term into next season. It's unlikely Parker's going to be around, and who knows if Baird's going to be around. So that's going to be his natural position. And I think, you know, he has to be a bit more disciplined, certainly, going forward. But he's still young, let's remember that. And just quickly on the two goals, yeah, I mean, Kearney's finish was really good. And then the, you know, we scored at a corner. So, you know, directly from a corner with a header with the smallest defender on the pitch. So there you are. And we were all happy in the end. I'll just say about Charlton, they had a couple of chances. The one at the end, though, where he just skied it, and that pretty much set their fans off. Their fans have been having a bad time. And so there's a bit of trouble down that end, but I think that was the final straw for them to vent their anger at the owners and the membership, the owners and the, you know, manager and everything else that's going on down there at the moment. But overall, better team in the second half, and because of the changes to formation and personnel, and some great play by Kearney, who was clearly man of the match for me.
Okay, excellent. David, over to you. I want to get your second half observations. Also, I have a question for you, because I know this was a concern for you. You and I have talked about Michael Maddle, and him not being the tallest center back. I think he makes up for it with his jumping ability and his overall toughness. I want to get your thoughts on his play. Mike Gregg seems to be more sold on him now, so I'm curious what your thoughts are on Maddle now after seeing him a few times, and overall your second half observations.
Well, I was never unsold on him. I just obviously sort of go into it with caution, and I wait to see someone until I sort of cast my judgment. And on what I've seen of him so far, obviously I wasn't there, thankfully, to witness the horror show on Tuesday, which should probably be his worst performance as everyone else's. But in the home performances I've seen of him, the QPR performance, I should say, and the home performance. Now, I'm I'm pleased so far. I don't think his height is a hindrance for him. He does seem to be able to get up quite well defensively and obviously offensively, as we saw yesterday. And he seems to read the game quite well. As Mike was saying, he's one of those marking sort of defenders who seems to know the right place to mark, you know, the opponent, i.e. don't get too tight to them, don't give them too much space. So far, you know, I don't think I could go to saying he's, you know, our best defender or the best defender I've ever seen or anything else or make any superlatives, but so far so good, been very happy with him. And it just kind of makes it more strange that maybe he wasn't chosen to start the match yesterday, that, you know, the 3-5-2 clearly worked and we were a better team all round when he was on the pitch. I mean, otherwise, second half, I think I've kind of, you know, already given most of my opinions there, talking about the goals and what I saw. I didn't comment on the Tony Cliff one, apart from at the start, but I thought he could have been a bit lucky. Guy next to me was going absolutely mad, saying, you know, stupid idiot, you're going to get us off red there, because he thought he actually went over the ball. And it was a very, very determined challenge, but clearly Tynecliffe wanted to show that he was back, he was fit and wanted to impress, you know, the powers that be. But if you remember, we had this referee when we played Liverpool in the Premier League once, and Jay Spearing won the ball from Moussa Dembele fair and square. But with such force that he was given a straight red card, on the basis that it's not about whether you win the ball or whether you don't or what the intent is, but if the tackle is likely to cause the opponent harm or could be viewed as dangerous, it can still be punished with a card. And the ref obviously, because Tynecliffe, I actually spoke to him, he insisted he won the ball yesterday. I think he probably did win the ball, but he just kind of flew into the tackle, and I can understand why the ref chose to penalise it, and I think he was a bit lucky with that. But it would have been, you know, also it would have been a bit harsher had it been a red. So I suppose a yellow was, you know, the common sense approach in the way. It wasn't as if he'd flown in wildly with both feet off the ground and everything. He just was determined to you know, to win the ball. It was an attempt to win the ball, but you know, he has to be careful. As I say, you know, he's perhaps going to be the future of our central midfield with other players. We don't know what their futures are. Obviously, Parker's coming to the end of his career. Baird, well, likewise to point as well, really. Whether he's retained, I don't know. It'd be nice if he can be retained based on what we saw yesterday. But we do have plenty of other options there. You know, LVC is meant to be our future as well. O'Hara, you know, very interesting that he's only here for 1 year and there's been no talk yet, but I would like to think that he's going to be retained next year. But there are several in their final season, people like Kakanichis as well, of course, who maybe they aren't going to be retained. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens when it comes to the end of the season and who Slavisa decides he wants to keep. But I would imagine Tynecliffe is certainly one of those. And so we need him to be the player that he's shown he can be on occasions. He needs to be the future of Fulham. He needs to provide that protective barrier and also the energy and movement that we know he can do, but without, you know, giving away too many yellow cards or red cards, because, you know, it's not going to be helpful to the cause. And, you know, we got rid of Sidwell, who was capable of giving away free kicks on the edge of the air, and we've got Amabieta back who can do that already, so we don't need another one to do it. But otherwise, no, great second half. Otherwise, Charlton, as I say, you saw why they are bottom of the table, because their finishing was appalling, unfortunately. On another day, we would have been punished, certainly with losing our clean sheet, but, you know, potentially with even losing the 3 points had they been better. But it was the right result, the win, even though the stats, which you're going to come to, I guess, are very even, really. Very even stats, but we certainly were the better team second half by far, I'd say.
I totally agree with that, David, but the stats are even just about to go there. And Emilio, I'll start with you with the stats. But before I do, I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about Ryan Tynecliffe, his return, and this situation. What are your thoughts on it? Should it have been a yellow or should it have been a red?
You know, I'm going to stay neutral. You know, I'm not Tynecliffe's biggest fan, never have been, but, you know, I'll give him credit where it's due. I think, you know, he was, you know, for that sort of autumn spell until he got injured, you know, he is one of our key players, and, you know, I think we have badly missed him the last 3 months, 2.5 months.
I agree.
Ago, injured. You know, we've missed that physical presence in midfield, that energy. You know, he's covered a lot of ground. He might not be technically, he might not be the best player that we've got in our books, but the amount of ground he covers on the pitch, his physical presence, people know he's there, being a nuisance. You know, I think we have missed that. We haven't had that presence in the last 2 or 3 months. And you know, I'm glad to see him back on the bench. It was a welcome surprise to see him there. But to David's point, you know, he was quite lucky to stay on the pitch. You know, at the end of the day, people behind me saying exactly the same thing. You know, you're 3-0 up. You've only just come onto the pitch. You know, you've played like a devil possessed. You know, you're supposed to say, look, I need to get the ball. We're 1-0 down, 10 minutes to go. We need to search for an equaliser. But in reality, we were 3-0 up, cruising. Yeah, he comes and shows his presence with the first tackle he won successfully, but albeit, you know, had he mistimed that could have been a yellow card. And, you know, it's all unnecessary. So he just needs to calm down. So, you know, the Kanovic just needs to pat him on the back and say, look, you're back. Take your time. Don't do nothing rash because we can't afford to go down to 10 men. We've done well to get back onto, you know, back into the squad so soon. Let's retain him there. And you know, it wouldn't surprise me if we'll start to see him, you know, starting in a couple of weeks' time. But good to see him back. Good to have that physical presence. But he just needs to just stay a little bit calm, mature a little bit, and we might see the best out of Tanner Cliff for the remainder of the season. But, yeah, I think on another day, he could have been sent off.
You know, I tend to agree with that, and I'm glad... Glad that it was David who brought up Jay Spearing. I remember that, and it seemed like a similar situation. So I feel he was fortunate, but I understand him being excited to play, and hopefully he will calm down because I think we do need him, and I think he will be a part of the team next season and moving forward. So, it is what it is. All right, guys, let's now move on to the stats, and Emilio, I'll go to you first off, but I'll just share the stats of the match, get your thoughts on it, what stands out to you. Possession Fulham led 52.9% to 47.1. Total shots, Charlton led 19-17. On target, each team had 5. Total passes, Fulham had more at 443 to 383. Attacking passes, Fulham also had more at 277 to 248. Key passes, Fulham had the edge there, 16-13. Passing accuracy, Fulham had the edge slightly, 79% to 75%. Crosses were in favor of Charlton, 23-20. Corners were in favor of Fulham, 9-6. Tackles in favor of Fulham, 23-12. Duels won, Fulham edged out slightly, 58-56. Aerial duels won. This was won by Charlton, 22-13. All right, Emilio, what stands out to you from the full-time stats?
I think, firstly, the possession. If we actually look at it was 52%. To 48% for the entire match, but actually at half time I think it was 59-41 in favour of Fulham. So interestingly, we appear to have dominated the second half, yet our possession rate was a lot lower. And with that, so that's an interesting stat because we were well ahead in terms of possession in that first half. The fact that we only had 5 shots on target again is still a worry for me. Again, the team is bottom, only 5 shots hit the target, and we scored from 3 of them. So that's not enough for me. We might have created 17 shots, of which only less than a third of them went on target. You play a team against Middlesbrough, Derby County, a couple of weeks ago. I think I had 2 shots on target. So that's a worry for me in terms of the style of football that we play. It might be pretty, it might be passive at times, but if it's only resulting in 5 shots that are hitting the target, that either go in the back of the net or a keeper having to make a save, frankly, that's not enough. That worries me still, and that's a worry I've been saying to you, Russ, for quite some time since the new coach has come on board. We need to up those numbers to win more comfortably and to also ensure that when we do play a stronger team, that it's a few chances we do get, we bury them. But overall, you know, the fact that we won more corners, which is fine, but if you look at these stats independently without looking at scoreline, you wouldn't think we won the game 3-0. So that's, yeah, if you look at it collectively, that's another interesting stat. But worryingly, you know, we only won 13 out of... Charlton won 22 aerial duels. That concerns me equally. So, a mixed bag, really. Those stats don't imply that we won 3-0. But I think the one that sticks out most is why we only hitting the target 5 times against the worst team in the division. That concerns me significantly.
Okay, very interesting. And I'm glad that you mentioned the aerial duels one. I've been looking at that stat a great deal lately. We've been getting better at it, but in this match... We were outdone pretty handily in the aerial duels. Mike, over to you. What stands out to you from the stats?
Yeah, our possession was a little bit odd, as Emilio says. I mean, first off, we were at the kind of figures I expected us to be. So in the final totals, for me, that really reflect the game. But maybe we were a bit more direct in the sense that we were running with the ball more in the second half. So we, you know, we had it technically for less time. I don't know. But, you know, lots of passes again. And I'm going to... We spoke about stats, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago, and Emilio saying that, you know, five shots on target is not enough. And I don't know if you remember, I mentioned that the best shots on target per game on average is just under five anyway, and Hull are top of that. They average 4.9 shots on target per game. And guess where Fulham are? They're fifth in the whole league on 4.5. So yesterday was pretty much standard for us. You know, you're getting 4.5, 5 shots on target per game. It's fine, really, when you look at the overall sort of way the league plays. So I certainly agree that we don't get enough shots per game in total. But on target, we're way up. We're batting above average, well and truly. So, but, you know, for the rest of the stats, it was pretty much, you know, passing accuracy at 80%. Again, that's something, you know, we're constantly doing. And defending tackle success, you know, 83%. And we made, you know, double the tackles they made. So I think Dave said, you know, it didn't really reflect the game. You know, if you were looking at that, hit the scoreline, you'd think it was a 2-2 draw or something. But overall, still the positives for me is we're keeping the ball and we're making lots of passes. So long may that continue.
I agree with that, Mike. David, over to you. What stands out to you from the stats? And I know you're big into the corners. Are you still big into the corners?
Well, I think that the corners are kind of sometimes give you an indication when there's a kind of a disparity with the possession. But the corners, you know, they were overall, you know, it was a fairly fair reflection of how the game went. Charlton had the edge first half. We certainly were the better team second half. We'll say Charlton had the edge first half. They certainly weren't second best anyway. So the corners were, you know, I think the corners are about right. The possession, I think the reason why it wasn't as dominating is that it was a much more open game second half. As I say, we normally what we do is this kind of pass it around when we, you know, when we sit as we do, when we pass it sideways, we pass it backwards, we go forward, we come back again. And so we do keep the ball longer without necessarily being very, very productive with it. But yesterday we were much more productive and we were getting forward quicker. You know, we had a more spread out formation. We were playing with width, we were playing with pace, you know, and movement. And I think that's probably why the possession was less, because we were holding on to the ball for less time. Chris Baird was an example of this. Chris Baird was looking, you know, nearly every time to get rid of the ball straight away. He was looking for an early pass. He was trying to create that movement and that pace that we've been lacking, really, when we do. I mean, and O'Hara, I'm a big fan of O'Hara, as you know, but O'Hara does get a lot of the ball and he does lots of short passes and he plays it to someone and he takes it back off them, and then and we do a lot of that without actually getting anywhere, whereas Baird was looking to set people free straight away to move the ball on. So in terms of amount of time, I think we held the ball for less time, which probably is why the possession figure as it is. Getting with the shots issue, although perhaps yesterday was about average for the number of shots we had, or slightly better than average, obviously you would expect it yesterday to have been, you know, better than that, really, playing a poor team who have conceded a lot of goals also. You would think perhaps yesterday we should have had more shots on target than we did. So that's, you know, it's perhaps a slight disappointment, especially when you consider we had 17 shots, I think. So our conversion rate wasn't brilliant. And if you actually, forgetting what the stats say and everything, when you actually look at what happened yesterday, there were several situations where perhaps we should have got the shot on target. You know, examples of this, McCormack's in the first half, just before first half-time. He should have got that on target. There was another one, Dembele did the same thing second half. He should have got that on target. Tom Kearney's, you know, maybe it sounds a bit harsh, but when he ran through and tried to chip the keeper, he should have got that on target also. So straight away, that would have, you know, three more on target, that really would have changed the dynamic. We've been talking about like a 50% success rate converting shots to shots on target. So I think perhaps yesterday we were a little bit wasteful in that respect. Obviously, Charlton were extremely wasteful, as we know. But the shots on target can also be, they can be misleading a little bit. Moussa Dembélé had another one where he took it back from his left foot to his right foot, and it was a complete P-roller. It was, you know, the weakest shot you'll ever see. But that would still count as a shot on target, of course, in the stats, I would
sure.
imagine, even though it was you know, lighter than a gentle back pass, really. But overall, you know, the stats, as I say, the stats showed that it was probably much more even than it should have been. And in the main, though, we were, you know, we were winning in most of the battles, aerial duels accepted, and actual total number of shots accepted. So Charlton, you know, they're going to feel a bit aggrieved they didn't get the ball on target more, or certainly didn't at least get a consolation goal. But as I say, when you watch the match as we did, and I guess you've seen it as well, Russ, since, you'll see second half, really, we were much more dominating second half than perhaps the stats would appear to make it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, David. You know, I watched it this morning, and first half was worse than I listened to. Second half was pretty much what I expected it was. It was a dominant performance in the second half, and I'm just glad that Slavica made the changes to unlock some of our players and really open things up, because I think that really helped with the flow of the game in the second half. Stats pretty much back up that it was an even game, but I still think Fulham dominated, especially in the second half. All right, guys, let's now go to rating the players. Before I do, Mike, I want to mention this. I after you guys rate the players, I'll go through the ratings from the Viva El Fulham poll that you did. But I'm just curious, before we go ahead, how many votes this week?
Yeah, it was 170-odd. I closed it earlier today as well, so sometimes I let it run to the end of the evening. But everyone got high votes. So, you know, there were a couple of the usual, I don't like that player no matter how well he plays. But, you know, it all works itself out in the end. But thanks to everyone who voted.
Absolutely, and I'll go through that right after you guys give your ratings. And I just want to ask, just for time's sake, if we could limit you going through the entire team and in 2 minutes' time, you know, just give a rating and a little thought on each player. And Emilio, I will start with you. Rate the Fulham team that played on Charlton Athletic yesterday.
Okay, then. So Lonergan, I'm going to give him a 7. You know, made a very good save in the first half, as we mentioned earlier in the show. But, you know, there have been some instances where, you know, he flapped a couple of times when, you know, crosses and corners. So a little bit of a concern there, but he kept a clean sheet, so I'll give him a 7. Fredericks, I'm giving it equally a 7. Good second half, some good dangerous crosses, two good penetrating runs. So he deserves a solid 7 there, and also a clean sheet. For Bernard and Morubiet, I'm both giving them a 7. So I thought they were overall quite commanding, especially in that first half, despite the yellow card that they both picked up. But they're starting to form some sort of relationship and bond there. So, you know, at the end of the day, they deserve their 7 rating. Garbutt was probably the weakest of the defence. You know, other than that good cross that David mentioned earlier, you know, he didn't really offer much in the game. Fairly quiet, nothing spectacular. So I give him a 6.5. O'Hara was a disappointment yesterday. You know, again, looked overweight, looked lethargic, looked tired. Maybe he just needs a rest. With Baird coming into the team now, I see O'Hara's days are potentially numbered in the foreseeable future. He probably needs a rest. But be interesting what lineup we put out on against Leeds and Middlesbrough in the coming games. But I gave him only a 6. Parker, I thought, had a very, very good game. We missed his presence on Tuesday night. Captain's performance again, so a very, very strong 8. And Boss at midfield, he was quite vocal throughout the game, and his hand signals when we scored the goals was quite touching as well. So yeah, very strong 8 there for Parker. Kaká, probably the worst player on the pitch, only a 5. Like I said earlier, did very little. Kearney, by far man of the match, 2 goals, but his second half dominant performance, was a very exciting. He was always looking for the ball, always looking a threat, always trying to carve out opportunities, and he's got a great shot in him and a good eye for goals. So a well-deserved 9 there. Dembele, only give him a 6.5. Other than that sort of opportunity where he hit the bar, he was quite wasteful yesterday. Again, I don't want fans to get on the back of him. I know he's going to leave at the end of the season, but you know, he is trying his best. Things aren't necessarily running for him in recent weeks, and he'll go through this bad spell and will soon score a goal, and suddenly his confidence will come back up again. But unfortunately, because he's quite wasteful, I'm only giving him a 6.5. For Cormack, I'm giving him a 7. You know, again, nothing spectacular. He got the assist from the corner for Mardell's goal, but other than that, maybe should have scored the goal from that beautiful, you know, play in the second half, which deserved a goal. But let's, you know, give him only a 7. As far as the subs are concerned, Mardell, I'm giving an 8. Clean sheet in the second half, scored a goal, looking quite dominant in defence. Chris Baird, I'm giving him a 7. Mike mentioned all the points earlier. Doing the simple things effectively, a lot of talking, a lot of hand signalling, back to the Chris Baird of old. So give him a solid 7. And Tunnicliffe, don't know if you're on the radar, I'll give him a 5, only because he got a yellow card needlessly. So those are my ratings.
Okay, very good there, Emilio. Mike, over to you.
Yeah, Lomigan, he made a good 2 or 3 saves, especially one in the second half low down. I'm going to give a 7. The fullbacks, Fredericks, more freedom in the second half, and you know, got in the box a couple of times, which is what you want him to do with that pace. So I'm going to give him a 6.5. Garbutt, he did well with the cross, and obviously a vast improvement than Tuesday, but still feel not quite there at the level he had been playing at. So I'm going to give him a 6. The 2 centre-backs did their job. Not too many mistakes. Both got bookings, but, you know, clean sheet, so I'm going to give them both 7. O'Hara, for me, was disappointing. Did look lost at times. I am a fan of his, and but I'm only going to give him a 5.5. Thought he dwelt on the ball a little bit too long and didn't pass it quick enough. Kaká, he had one decent run, but apart from that, you know, the right side of a diamond is not his position, and so, you know, Jokanović may have killed the fullbacks, but I think he may have killed Kaká as well yesterday. So I'm only going to give him a 5. Parker, who initially yesterday I was sort of, last night, I think I said to Dave I was going to give him man of the match, but I thought about it more, and I think he wasn't as inspirational as last week, but he was certainly, you know, a good captain and important, but I'm going to give him an 8. Kearney, I'll give an 8.5 because I do think, you know, he's in that position now. He showed what he can do. 2 goals are a bonus, but most of the best attacking intentions we had yesterday went through him. Up front, I thought both forwards were a little bit disappointing. I thought, you know, a bit subdued. Both did good things. Both did pretty horrendous things at times. So I'm only going to give them 6 each. The subs, Tunnicliffe, I'm not going to mark. I don't think he was on long enough. Baird, I mentioned early, prompting, talking all the time. There's a couple of good photographs on the Fulham Flickr page of the sort of thing he was doing. So I'm going to give him a 7. And Medel, I'd said already, you know, he came on, gave us that more assured defensive side on the right-hand side, especially with Fredericks, who was rampaging up the right there. So I'm going to give him a 7.5. So my man of the match, Kearney, 8.5.
Okay, excellent there, Mike. David, over to you.
Yeah, I think mine's pretty similar to most of these, really. Lonergan, 7, same reasons. Didn't really make any mistakes. I could see made one good punch where it did need to punch it. Low down save in the second half was my pick of his saves, really, when the guy, he's read where the guy's going to put it. Fredericks, I think, was certainly the better of the full-back stroke wing-backs. Really showed his worth second half, breaking into the box a few times, getting to the byline, taking people on, putting the ball back. And I think, obviously, as well, for the courage shown after recovering from his injury, let's say, in the first half. So 7 for me as well. But both initial centre-back 7 also did well to keep disciplined when both on yellow cards. Obviously, could have gone nasty if either of them had got a red card. But both did their job pretty well, kept a clean sheet, so you can't really ask more than that. Garbutt, he was also my most disappointing of the defenders, although I don't think he had a bad game. I don't think we saw much of him at all first half. Second half, he came into his own a little bit, but wasn't really in the same league as Fredericks. A couple of runs down the left, but he doesn't have that burst of pace that Fredericks has, thankfully. So I would give Garbutt a six also. Kaká was my weak link as well, apart from that run first half. He was pretty anonymous, really, pretty lost in there. And I think, you know, we talked about some of the players in midfield. I think all the midfield four were really lost in the first half because it was the system just didn't fit for them. That even included Tom Kearney, who had a great second half. I don't think anyone had a fantastic first half in midfield. But, I mean, Parker was consistent all the match. He does what he does. He's not in there to create, you know, out-and-out goal-scoring chances, but he leads the team pretty well. He's prepared to get stuck in. And I gave him 8 out of 10, Parker, because I thought overall he was consistent throughout the match. O'Hara, I understand what others said. I think he was suffered also a little bit from the system. He was killed by Jokanović as well first half because everyone was so narrow and so tight. He didn't have many options really with the ball, and he was just running down blind alleys. But I gave him a 6. I don't think he was unfit or anything. I just think that it didn't quite work for him. I don't think he was particularly taken off because he played badly. I think it is more tactical, in fact, that his legs are being rested for Tuesday. I might be wrong, though. Be interested to see what the lineup is on Tuesday. Kearney, I also gave him an 8, the same as Parker. I thought he had a fairly quiet first half, really, because it didn't really work for him, stuck in there. As I say, there's not the range of options because he didn't have anyone wide to give the ball to particularly. Kakalicic was hiding. O'Hara and Parker were kind of stuck in the same sort of position as well. So Kearney didn't have the options to do what he does best. But obviously second half, he came into his own. The goal, of course, you know, was his highlight of the first half on his right foot as well. So 8 out of 10 for me also. I thought out of the strikers, McCormack was definitely the busier. He does lots of these little short sort of, you know, things where he gets hold of the ball and runs the defenders into channels and stuff. And he does that quite well. He shows his sort of zippiness over a short space of time. 7 out of 10 for me. I think he put in a good effort. Could have done better with that shot, obviously, as we said. Dembele, I really thought, apart from that one that hit the bar, I thought he had a poor game, really. He couldn't trap a bag of sand yesterday. I know it was slippery and a bit wet, but his control was pretty poor. He kept giving the ball away. I'm not saying he wasn't interested, but it just didn't work for him, really, yesterday. Maybe, again, the system in the first half didn't suit him as well as it could have done, but just 6 out of 10 for me, really. Very average game. Substitutes Maddle, I think, deserves the same accolade as the other defenders, although he only played half the match. He was part of the clean sheet, ultimately, so, and with the goal he scored, he's worthy of a 7 out of 10 as well. No-nonsense performance. Baird, perhaps a 7, but one glaring error, as we mentioned. I don't want to punish him for that, but on another day, that could have been punished a lot worse, really. It was too complacent, just letting the ball run across him, and his pocket was picked by the Charlton player. 6.5 for me for Baird. Let's not get too excited over him. You know, it's great to have him back, but let's not, you know, think that he's going to single-handedly change our fortunes around. He's just going to be part of that jigsaw. Can't give Tynecliffe a mark either. It's not fair to mark someone for 5 minutes when everyone else has played sort of 45 to 90 minutes. And if I was to mark him, I would probably mark him down for being over exuberant anyway. But say more or less same sort of marks, I think, as the other two guys.
Okay, very good there, David. Who was your man of the match?
Well, it was between Parker and Kearney. For me, really, I sort of almost give it to them jointly. I suppose if you had to sort of press me, I would go Kearney as well on the basis, obviously, because he's scored a couple of goals.
Okay, very good. And Emilio mentioned to me that Tom Kearney was his man of the match, and second was Parker, and I understand that. All right, guys, before we go to Slavica, because I want you to rate Slavica to end the show, I just want to mention, like I was talking about, Mike's poll on Viva El Fulham. The winner was Tom Kearney. He won his third. This is third win in 4 games, which is pretty impressive. He won it. Tom Kearney was first, followed by Parker, Maddle, Lonergan, Byrne, Baird, Fredericks, McCormack, Amorebieta, Dembele, Garbutt, Tynecliffe, O'Hara, and Kaká was the least rated in the Viva El Fulham poll. So that's the order that it went. Emilio, I will go to you. Let's talk about Slavisa. Rate the manager. Rate the head coach.
So I'm going to give him an 8. So again, you know, I think we've talked about in detail is, you know, the bravery, the courage, and the boldness of those changes he made at halftime. So he certainly got more marks for making those changes at halftime. You know, where he's dropped a couple points from my perspective was the maybe the sort of lack of, you know, bit of a conservative not starting lineup, and maybe like we discussed earlier, you know, admitting to making a mistake. So you've got to penalise him at some points for not picking the right lineup. But overall, you know, courageous. It was a confident win. He made some brave changes. He wasn't afraid to make those changes. And at the end of the day, you know, he stuck to his guns, made the changes. We got the win, and let's go on to Leeds. But overall, I know we're conscious of time. We've got a few minutes left. So 8 out of 10, I think, is a fair reflection of his overall performance in terms of lineup and changes he made at halftime.
Okay, 8 out of 10 for Slavisa. David, to you.
Well, I'm going to be harsh, I'm afraid, on this one. I would on a sort of pure rule of thumb, I'd say, well, he got it half right. First half, he got it wrong. Second half, he got it right. So I'd only give him 5 out of 10. But on the basis that he did accept that he'd made a mistake and he made the changes, I'm going to give him 6. And I also qualify that because I gave him 8 out of 10 against QPR last week. And that, I think, was a much better performance overall, you would say. Remember, we were playing the worst team in the league here. And I think, you know, first half, we were fortunate to be in the lead. And I put that down to him getting things wrong. And he basically has admitted that he got it wrong as well. So, you know, the fact that 6 out of 10 for me is a moderate mark, you know, an average mark, really. So he's done some things right, he's done some things wrong. I think that sums up how I saw it yesterday. I want to obviously see him make the right choices from the start, and that's what obviously we hope he'll be able to do. Obviously, the next best thing is if he realises he hasn't made the right choices, that he's at least prepared to make that change. And we've seen several games where he's changed things at half times. So that's a positive for me there, I think. But
okay.
I think we all realise that this 3-5-2 with Kearney in the advanced central position works better. The wing-backs work better. We need him to sort of kind of show more faith in that. And the fact that he turned away from it was a little bit of a worry for me yesterday. But as I say, he did correct that. So, yeah, that's why I give him 6.
Okay. Mike, to you, I'll give you the final word on Slavisa.
Okay, well, I mean, it's all been covered. You know, it was a mixed first half, made the changes, but I can't mark him low, really, than 8.5. He, for me, gets bonus points for his interview afterwards and 2 substitutions at halftime when you're leading. Yes, he made a mistake in the first half, but surely, given all that we've gone through over the last few years with managers, that shows, you know, that's worth some extra points, you know. So for me, 8.5, and, you know, I look forward to when he gets everything perfect then, because I'll take a 3-0 if he's getting one thing wrong and then improving it through a game.
I will too, Mike. I will too. Before we go, just want to mention it because I forgot to mention it. The Cutters Talk Twitter page poll of Man of the Match, Tom Kearney won that. With 98 votes, Tom Kearney got 81%, followed by Scott Parker, 13%, Michael Maddle at 5%, and I put in Andy Larnigan as well. He only got 1%. So that was the Cutters Talk Twitter poll of Man of the Match. Great show, guys. We only have a little over a minute left. I just want to thank the three of you. This was an excellent episode. Thank you, guys.
Cheers.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Russ, David, Mike.
Okay, fantastic.
Cheers, everyone.
I'm sorry, Mike, did you say something?
No, I just said cheers, everyone, Russ. And well, let's look forward to Tuesday, and hopefully we can turn up this time for a midweek game in the north.
I certainly hope so, Mike. And cheers to you for making the trip. All right, time to wrap up the show. For David, Emilio, Mike, I'm Russ Coleman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk Extra Time. Cheers, guys. Have a great night.
Thank you. Speak to you soon.
Cheers. Cheers, Mike. And don't call me Sherry.